Welcome to Whiskey Cast Virtual Tastings. I'm Mark Gillespie. Support for Whiskey Cast Virtual Tastings comes from Kilhoman, Isla's farm distillery. For the last year, we've brought together members of the global Whiskey Cast community each month to form our virtual tasting panels. Whether it's by Skype or in person, their goal has been to nose and taste whiskeys and share their findings and their passion for whiskey with you. This episode marks the end of the first year of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings, and there's a bright future ahead. If you'd like to become a member of one of our tasting panels, keep listening. I'll tell you how later on. We'll meet this month's tasting panel and get started right after this.
Hello, I'm John McClellan, Distillery Manager at Kilhoman, which is Isla's youngest distillery. We're proud to bring you this episode of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings. If you can make it to Isla, we'd love to see you at the distillery. But until then, you can visit us on the web at kilhomandistillery.com or get a taste of Isla with a dram of Kilhoman from Isla's farm distillery.
Let's meet our tasting panel for this month now, and we're celebrating the end of the first year of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings by bringing back four of our panelists from previous episodes to join us for another go at the whiskeys of the month. First of all, we'll start off with Scott Rogers in Virginia. How are you tonight, Scott?
Doing very well, and just back from a three-day trip to the wild woods of Western Virginia, which included a stop at Catoctin Creek Distillery, which is my first trip to a Virginia distillery. So very exciting couple of days here.
Yeah, tell us about it real quickly, because we've mentioned Catoctin Creek on WhiskeyCast a few times, but just tell us real quickly about it. There was bottling days this weekend, right?
Yeah, and they're unfortunately not quite yet bottling their new grape brandy, which is going to be a sounds like a terrific product, aged 2 years. But we got to watch them throughout the distilling process. It's a very intimate, very small craft process. So we got to watch them mashing and distilling their rye whiskey.
Okay, thanks, Scott. Glad you got to experience that. Shelley joins us now. Shelley Brisbane down in Austin, Texas. Welcome back, Shelley.
Thanks, Mark. It's really nice to be back.
Now, tell us what you've been tasting recently since you were on the last time.
Well, since we're going to be a little bit of a homer group today, I'll tell you about some of the Texas whiskeys I've been tasting. You've mentioned the Balcones Distillery in Waco a couple of times, and I've really enjoyed their products. I've had a chance to go there. My new favorite is their Brimstone, which is an oak smoked whiskey. They smoke the whiskey after it's distilled, and it is, I guess it's an acquired taste, but I acquired it very quickly and really enjoy it.
I have acquired that one as well, as has Tim Davis, another one of our returnees who's up a little bit north of you up in McKinney, Texas. And you've hung out at Balcones a little bit too, haven't you?
Yeah, I've gotten to be pals with Chip over the last couple of years and have spent some time down there, and I concur. The Brimstone is absolutely fantastic, and he's got a few other little experiments he's been doing with the Brimstone that I've had a chance to try, and I know you, Mark, have had a chance to try some of it, too. It's some really good stuff.
Absolutely. What else have you been tasting, Tim?
I've recently picked up a couple of single barrels of Old Weller Antique, which is absolutely some fantastic whiskey that would give just about any Pappy a run for its money.
Wow. And finally, the fourth member of our panel this month, Sean Fauché, joining us from the Metroplex area in Arlington, Texas. How are you tonight, Sean?
Doing well, Mark.
And what have you been up to these days? What have you been tasting?
Oh, well, to kind of continue with the Texas theme here, I've been really enjoying Ranger Creek lately. And I'm hoping to get a tour here first of next month when I go down to San Antonio. So I'm like the other two, like Shelley and Tim. Brimstone is certainly right up my alley as well. I think it's a Texas thing. And really been enjoying everything Texas has to offer. And recently got a couple of nice bottles sent to me from some friends over in Isla. And been enjoying that.
Well, let's start off. We'll get to Isla in a few minutes and with our second sample, but we'll start off with a single malt. We haven't really done any the Japanese single malts on virtual tastings yet, so I thought we'd start off this month. If you'll pour your glasses with sample A, that is the Suntory Yamazaki 18-year-old. It is bottled at 43% ABV. Of course, it comes from the Yamazaki distillery, where Mike Miyamoto used to be the manager. We've had him on WhiskeyCast a number of times over the years.
And this is the oldest Japanese whiskey that's currently available in the U.S. market. Of course, there really are only two or three, and Suntory's 12-year-old is one of those, along with the Hibiki 17-year-old. And I'm still told that later in 2012, we should be getting some Nikko whiskeys in for the first time. So now that you've had a chance to pour your glasses of Yamazaki 18, let's start nosing. What do we get on the nose?
Nice rich oak.
It's almost like a buttery toast note on this.
Okay.
I get the oak, but there is a surprising lightness given the age.
Mm-hmm.
Sean?
Yeah, it doesn't smell. It doesn't nose like an 18-year-old. It noses like a much younger whiskey, but there is a maturity to it, just kind of sitting at the very end. I'm kind of getting almost like a licorice note.
Is this a finished whiskey? Is there any sherry or anything like that they've done with it?
No finishes. This is a straight 18 years old, although I suspect there's a mix of casks involved.
All ex-bourbon barrels?
No, I wouldn't say all ex-bourbon barrels. I'm sure there's some sherry barrels. There's some oak ex-bourbon barrels. There may be some Mizunara oak barrels from Japan in there as well.
Yeah, that could be where the extra punch of oak that I'm getting, because it's not like an aged, dry, termite-y kind of thing. It's just a really nice, you know, there's a almost like some cedar chips kind of thing.
The sense of age that I'm getting off of this, especially after just having tasted 2-year-old rye whiskey in Virginia, is the integration of it. I feel like I'm getting a whole bunch of things wrapped into one rather than a sequence of different notes and flavors.
There really seems to be the lightness and the sort of well-balanced flavor, it seems apparent. I was having trouble finding a name for the flavor I was getting off of the nose, and it maybe that's because it's well put together.
Yeah, the balance is excellent on the nose. It's you definitely get the oak, a little bit kind of almost like a cereal malt and some spice, which I thought I was identifying as licorice at first, but I think it was kind of a combination of the spice and the oak.
I'm a big fan of the Yamazaki 12, and I've had that quite a few times, and this is my first time with the 18, and it does feel, it feels more well-rounded, a little more mature, but it doesn't lose any of the zest that I really like in the 12-year-old.
Ready to try it? I'll take that as a yes. Go ahead and taste it. And while you guys are doing your initial tasting, I'll explain the scoring scale that as returnees, you guys are all familiar with. We score on a 0 to 5 basis with half points acceptable. There'll be one score for each whiskey from each of our panelists. We take those scores, average them together, report out an average score for each whiskey from the entire panel, and to prevent any kind of peer impact on the scoring, each of the panelists will write down their scores at their computer and then email them to me. We won't discuss them here on the show until after we've released the entire score for the aggregate for each whiskey. And at that point, we'll discuss scores. But this way, nobody has a chance to have any kind of impact on the other tasters on the panel and how they score each whiskey. So that said, how's the taste on this Yamazaki 18?
Glorious.
There's a lot. Oak. The oak from the nose definitely carries through to the flavor, and there's a little bit of there's spiciness. There's definite spiciness to it. I almost said there was a burn, but I'm revising that to say that it's really a spiciness that seems to come from the age and the oak. I have trouble coming up with names for flavors sometimes, and this is like very right now, but it's well balanced. It's quite spicy and nice.
I would call the spices in the range of a pie spice, and for me they build slowly, but they come on strong, and it's just lovely.
Tim,
yeah, it's consistent throughout the entire taste. It doesn't kind of ebb and flow. You don't get kind of a upfront hit and then it kind of dies down. The spice just kind of builds, and then it's present throughout the entire palate until the end. And I agree with the kind of the pie spice. I'm thinking like when I make pumpkin pie, it's kind of like pumpkin pie spice or like fresh cinnamon. It's that kind of spice.
Maybe some nutmeg?
Yep.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Yep. I was going to say nutmeg. It definitely carries through from what I'm used to with the 12-year-old. It's not quite as viscous of a mouthfeel that you get on the younger version of this. But despite the oak influence and the tannic structure, it's very wet. It's not dry. Fresh-shaved cinnamon, nutmeg, definitely. Right when you first saw some cedar wood, that kind of tingle that comes with the cedar is all part of this. And then there's a very big sweet blossom kind of at the end of it, which I'm going to assume it's a little raisiny, maybe a little red fruit. I'm going to assume there's some sherry influence in there, but I don't know if that's true or not.
And I'd like to emphasize that on the approach, although it's very tannic, the wood is there, it's resolving itself for me in those vanilla and butter notes that I know that drinkers of Chardonnay are looking for. It's not just like chomping on wood chips. There's an integration and there's a development of that. That's the first thing that hits my palate, and it's delightful. And then to have that turn into that pie spice, it really is just a delightful, delightful whiskey.
Well, let's add a few drops of water and see how it changes with the addition of water to the mix.
I'm not really liking the addition of a few drops of water. Opens the nose up a little bit, but for me, from a taste perspective, it was already so light. I think it dials it back a little bit.
On the nose, a little more fruit, a lot less wood. And I'm not sure if I like that about it.
Shelley?
I was actually really surprised at how much of an effect it had on the nose. Typically, my experience has been that when you add water, most of the impact is on the taste. And there really is a difference in the nose, and you lose some of the spice and some of the oak and really some of the character of it. And on the taste, I think it preserves some of the tannins and some of the oak, but some of what makes it a complex and well-rounded taste is lost when you add a little water.
Sean, what are your thoughts?
Well, I agree. Adding the water on the nose really dials back the oak. For me, it kind of brought some of the spice, and I was kind of getting almost like an orchard fruit kind of note to it. Not necessarily like a red apple, kind of, I guess, closer to a pear or a green apple. But it's not really, you know, an apple kind of pear note. I don't know. Maybe it's something it's picking up from Japan, but it's definitely a fruit of some kind. The water for me on the taste, I felt like the nice kind of consistent taste that you got from it without the water was kind of disturbed a little bit when you added a couple of drops. I didn't really care for it too much with the water, but on the nose, I wasn't disappointed with the water. Mainly on the taste, I felt that it kind of fell apart a little bit when you added the water to it.
Any final thoughts on this one?
Well, just I was experiencing what Shelley was experiencing on the nose, and I was surprised very much by that. The change, the swiftness of that change. On the taste, I was getting the wood flavors in about the same kind of pressure, but I had none of that vanilla or butter at the front. And the spice just dissipated. It did not linger on the finish for me with the water the way that it did without.
Yeah, water's not this one's friend, and it would be wonderful to try it at cask strength. What did you say the ABV was?
This is at 43.
Okay.
I've never tried an 18-year-old cask strength. They don't release very many except for single cask bottlings. I've never tried a cask strength aged Yamazaki other than a single cask. That would be interesting to try.
Your next mission, should you choose to accept it.
I'd accept that mission. Let's go ahead and mark down the scores for this one, and then we'll move on to our second whiskey for the month, the Bunahavn Toychek. This is a bit more unusual than most Bunnehofens in that it has some peated Bunnehofen in it. It's a combination of both peated and unpeated. In fact, Teutschek is Gaelic for smoky, and that's the reasoning behind the name. This has been available in Europe for a couple of years and is only now coming into the U.S. market over the next few weeks. So I wanted to give you guys a chance to try this one out, especially since most of the Bunnehofens that are available around the world are the unpeated variety. So this should be an interesting change of pace. It is bottled at 46% ABV, non-chill filtered, no caramel coloring. And if you guys will nose sample B and tell me what you think of it.
I'm excited about this. I've actually got a couple of bottles of peated Bunnehofen that are single barrels that I've picked up over the last few years. And some are always better than others.
Were these independent bottlings or distillery bottlings?
Independent bottlings through Signatory, mostly okay. Through Benny's. And it smells just like it. The peated Bunnehofens have this lightly charred red meat. A savory, rich, creamy, you know, like meat kebabs kind of things that are just very lightly cooked.
No, I'm glad you said that because I had ribs for dinner tonight and I was just thinking maybe the ribs were contaminating the whiskey for a moment.
And it's very similar in the peat approach that that like Jura has, superstition or prophecy.
Okay.
It's definitely not traditional Islay peat in the way I think of it.
Scott, what do you think?
Well, I'm relatively new to peated whiskeys. I probably had more experience with Laphroaig, some various expressions than anything else, and this has definitely, it hits me on the nose with the phenols, but it's a different and more of an iodine note, and I actually enjoy it much more. And that when you mentioned the sort of the savory meats, the barbecue, that hits home. And there's a hint to that I think is why I'm enjoying this so much more than my limited experience so far with highly peated whiskeys. And also, this is probably less than highly peated, so... this is very interesting on the nose.
Shelley?
I love peated whiskey. That is, Islay whiskeys are my go-to. And so my first reaction to this is that it's very different on the nose than most Islays that I have tasted, and especially the ones that I've enjoyed. And I like the iodine is a good descriptor. And I'm not sure how I feel about it. There's so much chemical, so much iodine going on in there that I'm really curious on the taste, because for me the nose is just, I don't know, I can't place it. There's something I've had before that this reminds me of, but absolutely not an Islay whiskey. It's very different.
Well, go ahead and taste it. Let's see if we can figure out what it reminds you of.
It's much more lightly peated on the mouth than it is in the nose. Really doesn't strike me as that much more highly peated than, say, a Springbank or a Highland Park. Maybe a little more, but it's amazingly sweet. I mean, it is just sweet, malty, very viscous, almost a cotton candy meets a little bit of a rare piece of meat.
You know, for me, this, it kind of reminds me in that meat kind of influence. For me, it's more of a smokehouse barbecue kind of an influence. There's something to it to where, and once again, it could just be the ribs I had tonight. But no, what's coming through to me is that there's this kind of a, the smoke that they use, I guess the char in the barrels that they're using is what I'm kind of getting into here. It's not quite like an Ardbeg Alligator kind of a char, but there's, to me, the very first thing I got was kind of that beautiful kind of aftertaste you get when you're at like in a smokehouse and you kind of breathe in for a moment, you get all those fumes from the ovens and you're just getting this beautiful kind of smoke mesquite kind of note to it. And almost for me, it's almost very close to what I would kind of remember from the last year's bottling of the Laphroaig Karjus. To me, it was kind of that sweetness, the peat, but sweetness. It kind of reminded me a lot of that.
I definitely can see where you're coming from with that. There's a youthful, sweet maltiness to it. It drinks very light, and it's very sweet. I like this quite a bit. There definitely is a good balance between the peat and the sweet. That and again, it definitely reminds me of an expression out of Jura, and it's markedly different than, you know, a traditional smoky Lagavulin Artbeg Laphroaig, while still being very much a peat.
Shelley?
I agree with the comparison to Jura, actually, and one of the reasons I do is that I think the peat is somehow an undertone. It's a very strong undertone, but the sweetness is over top, and a lot of an Artbeg or Laphroaig or something like that is just so shot through with the peat. But this is as if, well, I think the analogy to meat is spot on in the sense that it's not that the whiskey tastes smoky, but that it definitely has an undertow of smoke, and that the sweetness is kind of the main flavor, and that the smoke gets in the back of your throat and sort of the lower part of your mouth, and it does remind me of my reaction to the Jura Prophecy and Superstition, both of which I've had the chance to drink.
Scott, what do you think?
Well, for someone who's kind of a peated newbie and comes to single malt from getting into bourbon first, some of my first notes on this were mild and approachable. The iodine note on the nose carries through, but there's a saltiness and a little bit of almost like a dripping fat barbecue kind of flavor to me that I really enjoyed. And the smokiness on this was reminiscent to me of like a grass fire, like burning mowing clippings or leaves, which again, I actually, that's a smell that I find particularly enjoyable. Just have that on the palate, kind of beyond that strong iodine note that I was getting in the nose, was a pleasant surprise. And the sweetness on this, it really did, there was sweetness and there was smoke and there were those phenols. It was almost making me wonder if this would, is what it would taste like if we peated bourbons.
Interesting. I wonder what we're going to do in the future when all these open burning bans teach us to not know what the smell of burning leaves is like. Because when we were all kids, we grew up burning leaves in the fall and burning piles of leaves, and that's how we get that smell and that aromatic memory. And kids today aren't going to have that growing up.
Well, there you go. I'm old enough to remember that, but my kid brother is just young enough that it was outlawed by the time he was a kid. So even in my generation, there are probably people who do and do not remember this. On the other hand, the hot, dry weather we're having lately, we've had some wildfires here in Virginia of late. So same kind of deal. Maybe you don't have to wait for your parents to burn the clippings. You can just wait for your highway median to catch on fire.
Actually, that thank you for mentioning that, because I actually grew up here in the Metroplex where you can't burn anything. And so I never had that sort of aromatic kind of memory. And to me, you know, when you're talking about that, definitely, you know, side of the road, you see a blaze on the median. That, to me, that makes a whole lot more sense than burning leaves and grass clippings, which unfortunately I was never able to actually enjoy as a kid.
Or the smell of burning cars and stuff after the riots following the latest Cowboys loss, right, Sean?
Oh, no. They only do that in L.A.
And Detroit, where I came from.
Sorry. I couldn't resist being an Eagles fan. I had to gig the Cowboys at least once.
That's a rich tradition up at the University of Maryland here in D.C.
So the comment about the sweetness in a smoked bourbon, you know, having had plenty of different ages of brimstone and been able to sample that with Chip, along with the MB Roland Black Dog, the American smoked stuff is far more barbecue and wood fire. But that sweetness of the corn-based distillate definitely shines through on this. It's very sweet for a malt. I mean, very, very sweet. Like I said earlier on, I mean, almost cotton candy sweet.
Now, we're still talking about the Toychek, which, of course, is all malted barley. So right. Let's not confuse it with the corn in a bourbon.
Exactly. But that's what I'm saying is, you know, for right. being a pure malt, it's really sweet.
Can I ask a question of Shelley, Sean, and Tim? The ending, the finish for this, for me, just left me with a little bit of a burn. And is that me not really knowing the idioms yet of a good peated whiskey? Were you getting that as well? Was there something that I'm misinterpreting?
No, I got it as well, but I wouldn't necessarily say the afterburn is indicative of a peated whiskey. I would say that's probably a little bit more of that smoky undercurrent that Shelley was talking about and kind of what Tim was alluding to with the comparison to the brimstone. It's the way that this one actually is toasted and peated to me, I definitely kind of see where Tim was going comparing it to the brimstone. It does kind of have that at the very end on the finish. It just kind of pops you right there at the end, just kind of remind you that, hey, it's still there.
Yeah, I tend to try not to refer specifically to a burn because I usually think to myself, well, there's probably something more complex going on. And I try to dial back and think, well, what am I missing? How could I be more descriptive about it? But I think you're right. I think there's a burn, but it's not an unpleasant burn. To me, I equate that with, the combination of it's peated, but it's fairly young. There's no age statement on this, Mark. Is that right?
No age statement.
Well, I'm confident it's a fairly young whiskey. I mean, just the color alone, it's very light. There's very minimal oak influence in the flavor and in the color. It's unchill filtered, though. Is that correct?
Correct.
And it's 46%?
Correct.
It's
good.
If
you didn't tell us it was a Buna Hobbin, I would have sworn it was another, maybe this year's Lafleur Karchus. I would have almost put money on it.
I would go there with you.
Let's add some water in, if you haven't already, and see if that changes things.
Mellows out the nose.
It absolutely does.
Sean, you say it mellows out the nose?
Yes.
See, for me, it opened it up and it turns it into a roaring bonfire instead of just a smoldering pile of leaves. It really opened up for me.
Well, I've had my sample with water sitting in it for probably a good 2 or 3 minutes, but maybe, I don't know. To me, it just kind of, I didn't quite get that huge hit of that iodine peat. It kind of blended in with the smoke. But to me, it balanced it out a little bit, but it definitely brought it down a notch.
And see, I'm picking up more volatiles, like, when you put kerosene or lighter fluid onto your charcoal, and when you first light it and you get the smoke with the leftover essence of the volatiles of the very strong, kerosene and ignition source.
Maybe I added too much water.
Maybe I didn't
Shall
add
we?
Enough. It really opens up on the taste, though. I think the reason I do is because it dials the smoke up, because I'm happy with the smoke as an undertone, but I think this is not a dram say would be among my favorites, but from my point of view, by the water, I'm really digging it, and it's got some complexity and some multiple elements. The smoke is a stronger and more volatile part of the mix.
Yeah, I definitely get the smoke now on the taste. That's more roaring campfire to me on the taste than the nose.
Mark, do you have it?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Scott. You haven't chimed in yet. I had a technical question about the bottle.
Well, I was just going to say I was not getting the sort of acetone burner fuel on the nose. I was getting a more subtle iodine and more of almost a grassy smell. But on the palate, I'm getting a much more nicely integrated sort of smoky, fire smoky, rather than that iodine, less of the salt. And I guess if I could choose, I would actually prefer the more aggressive nose without the water, but then the more integrated flavor with.
Okay.
I think I might be with you on that. Even though I didn't have nice things to say about the nose to begin with, I think I got more on the nose without the water, but I definitely like the taste a lot better with.
Mark.
Well, let's go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tim.
Do you know what the retail on this is going to be?
I do not know the retail price. I believe it's probably going to be in about the, probably ballparking it about the $60 range, and I could be wrong on that.
and yet another in the long line of NAS offerings.
I would agree. Yeah, but I think we're going to see more NAS offerings because it's easier to create NAS offerings if you don't have a lot of aged stock, or if you're trying to maintain stocks of to keep your current 12, 18, or whatever ranges. You can't keep those up and be able to make it work out if you don't balance it out with some NAS along the way.
From a production and manufacturing and distribution standpoint, I mean, it makes all the sense in the world. You know, as Harlan Wheatley had said a few months back, you know, I'm sitting on 1 million barrels I can't sell because they're, you know, 5 and 6 years instead of 7 years. So we could drop the age statement. If it tastes right, then we'll put it out.
Absolutely. Well, let's move on to our third whiskey now. If you guys will write down your scores for number two. This one I've decided is going to be a mystery malt. It is a single malt. I suspect that it will not be unfamiliar. But I want to give you guys a chance to try it without any preconceived notions. And I'm interested to see if anybody can figure out what it is. And we'll just have a little fun with this. So what I will tell you is that it is a single malt. It is non-chill filtered. It is bottled at approximately 51% ABV. So go forth and nose, guys.
You didn't say this was a Scotch single malt, right?
I said it was a single malt.
Because this is nosing more like an American single malt.
Corn, to me, if not bourbon specifically, at least corn.
I said a single malt, which means it's barley.
Ah, good point. Yep.
So what are we getting on the nose, guys?
Caramel.
Anything else?
There's grain here that's it's not quite weedy, but not wheat. I'm just not quite pinning it down.
Butterscotch, like caramel.
Sorry, go ahead.
Butterscotch, caramel. There's some stone fruit in there.
It's like a candy apple, kind of an apricot.
Yeah,
apricot. Good call.
I agree. Now that you said that, I completely wouldn't have gotten that without the prompting, but yeah.
I think I might know what this is.
There's got to be a sherry finish or some kind of...
I was going to say vanilla, and I think caramel may be more spot on, but my initial reaction was, but it's something in that flavor range, plus the apricot.
Yeah, apricot marmalade.
My very first reaction was actually circus peanuts as I was trying to identify the sort of, there was an oranginess that was leading towards apricot.
I've never heard circus peanuts in a tasting note before, but okay.
It works. It's got that orangey marmalade, and then it's also got the soft, fluffy kind of, definitely it's almost like it's got a citrus twist to it after it has air for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and taste it. Let's see what you think on the taste.
Hmm. Huge cinnamon explosion. Tastes like, can I take a guess?
Not yet.
Well, keeping in the candy theme, although there's a very nice and very subtle rounded sweetness at the beginning, the end of this is it's all red hot candy. It's those little red hots you get at the movie theater. That cinnamon is so strong.
Atomic fireballs.
Yes, exactly.
It is a cinnamon bomb.
Shelley, you haven't said much.
I agree about the atomic fireballs, and I'm still, I know we're talking about a single malt, but I'm just, it's screaming corn to me. It really is, and I'm so curious to know what this is. And it's reminding me of a couple of things that I know it cannot be that are bourbons, but it's got, I mean, it's not a traditional bourbon in the sense. I mean, it's got far more cinnamon and far more, well, there's a lot of sweetness there too. But it's
with you on that. If he hadn't said it was a single malt, I think my first guess initially would have been it definitely noses and definitely at least the initial taste is almost like a bourbon.
100% agree that it is a very bourbon-esque. It's very young, but it's been cask aged very well to hide the youthfulness. You almost can't tell. This is ridiculously young, but you can't tell it.
Go ahead and add some water to it now. Let's see what you think after the water's in it.
This is going to be fascinating to see what water does to it, because I'm trying to imagine what it would do, and it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to this.
I almost feel like we need to do two rounds of water.
More cinnamon, I think. Somebody dropped a red hot in my drink.
I agree. It releases the spice on the nose much more so.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the taste with water?
I like it, but I don't think it needs it. I think it is more of a cinnamon balm. The flavor overall is very much the same. It's just more of it. And given the choice, I think I'll leave off the water.
Scott, what do you think?
You know, on the palate, it dials the spice so far back for me, and it actually introduces a little bit of a sour. When I say sour note, I don't mean like sour cherry or unpleasant, but you know that slight bit of sourness that's in a Hershey's milk chocolate? I'm getting a little bit of that on the tongue, and I don't know if that's tannins that are just too weak, but I did a tiny bit of water thinking I might actually do a second drop of water in this, and on the nose it was interesting, but on the palate it's just way too much too fast.
I'd agree with that. For me, the taste, it kind of brought out a little bit more of a dark chocolate kind of a note to me. And the
sort of that bitterness of a dark chocolate?
Yeah, just a little bit of that. And rounded out the spices a little bit more. It was nice. I mean, you know, with the without the water, the taste was just massive explosion. And this was just more of like a subtle, like a fuse almost. And I didn't mind it with the water. I thought it was... I thought it held the water very well.
For me, with the water, it was like an American, either a wheat whiskey or a very highly wheated bourbon. But there just wasn't a lot going on to hold my interest.
I added a little more water, so I probably have, you know, 5 or 6 drops in there now as opposed to 2. And I'm liking it a little better. So I think there's probably a point where it's better than with just a tiny bit. So... Whereas, you know, typically you'd want as little water as possible and hope that would open it up sufficiently. I think it's either probably better neat or with a little more water.
Well, any hint I had of this being, you know, finished or amalgamation with any kind of finished sherry or wine barrel is totally gone. This is absolutely a bourbon of single malts. It's corny. It's rich. It's viscous on the mouthfeel. Had you not said it was a single malt, I concur with the other guys. It would be really hard not to call this a bourbon.
Do we like it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll be the dissenter and say no, but in wine tasting in particular, there's a thing that I experience also with movies where you can appreciate that something is good or interesting and not particularly enjoy it on a personal aesthetic level. And that for me is this. There were really interesting things going on that I've certainly, if you wouldn't have told me there was a single malt, I would not have guessed. But once you said that, things going on here that I have not tasted before in a single malt. And so very interesting. I'm glad I tasted it. But I'm not sure I'm rushing to the store to buy a bottle.
It's definitely good.
Anybody want to take a guess on what it is?
Balcones single malt.
I was going there too, either that or maybe something from Stranahan.
Mm-mm.
Tim, you're right. It was the Balcones single malt from Waco.
I haven't had a chance to try that yet. I've been wanting to. And you know what it reminded me most of is Garrison Brothers, which is another Texas, is a Texas bourbon. And so there's a lot of, not similarity is the wrong word, but there's a lot of DNA that I think those two distilleries share together. And I just drink this and that's Garrison Brothers. It has to because it's so much corn. It has seemed like corn to me, but I'm so now I'm so glad to taste this because
It's delicious. It's a cinnamon balm. Chip does a great job with his wood management, which is, you know, I guess you could take that. This is really good. It's far more cinnamony than other off the shelf single malts I've had. Is this something that he gave you specifically, Mark, or is this just an off the shelf standard?
This is off the shelf standard Balcona single malt.
Okay.
Also fascinating is it's nothing like any of the other Balconas I've had. I've had the Baby Blue, I've had Brimstone, and actually on a distillery visit, I had a version of this. He introduced it as a single. I'm not sure it's what he ended up releasing, but you really don't get cinnamon in the other Balconas expressions that I've had.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and put the scores down for all three of them, and while the panel emails me their scores and I put my rudimentary math skills to the test to come up with the aggregate scores, we'll take a short break. You're listening to WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings.
The secret word for this month's episode is mash bill. When the legends of whiskey have something to say, you'll hear it each week on WhiskeyCast.
Us Baptist just makes it for municipal purposes only. I keep a cough all the time.
From Kentucky to Scotland.
Sludge! Sludge! Sludge!
And everywhere in between.
What's Daddy's favorite whiskey?
Our Big.
It's an award winner. It's gone out of my head.
With the latest on new releases, whiskey events from around the world, tasting notes, and surprises along the way.
When you leave here today, you will all be feeling and looking 5 years younger. I come here twice each day. I'm 127.
I'm Mark Gillespie. Join us each week for the best in cask strength conversation and become part of our worldwide community of whiskey lovers. You can download WhiskeyCast at the iTunes Music Store or at WhiskeyCast.com.
Welcome back to WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings. The panel has spoken. The scores are in. And let's start off with the winner for this month was the Yamazaki 18-year-old with an average score of 4 on a 5 scale. The Bunahavn Toychek came in with a 3.6 aggregate. And the Balcones single malt from Texas came in at a 3.25 average. Any surprises there?
No.
Not at all.
No, if you would have told me in advance what all three of these were, I may have guessed that I would have liked C and B in a different order than I did. But good heavens that Yamazaki was just such a finely balanced whiskey.
I think you gave that one the highest score of any of the whiskeys that from any of the panelists, Scott, on the Yamazaki 18. What made it so unique for you?
Well, like I said, my first reaction about the age, I could taste the age, but it tasted like maturity rather than getting old. And again, my experience with older whiskeys, with I think 18-year-old is as old as I have tasted previously. And I've had some less balanced, sort of old-tasting 18-year-olds. I've not had something that was that well-rounded and mature and tasted like it could go. It tasted to me like they could have been, those barrels could have aged for a lot longer and still maintained just terrific quality.
What else did we learn from the other whiskeys, guys?
Well, I think Bunahavn's going to have a hit on their hands with the peat rage. What it is, putting out a mildly peated whiskey, and they've always been the lighter side of Isla, and that's kind of been their thing, and they didn't go over the top on this one. It's probably fairly young, but they've done a really good job integrating the peat to add extra chewiness and substance to it that I really think will make it a winner. I think it'll be a good entry for them into the United States market with a peated whiskey.
Shelley?
I think there are a lot of people who fear peated whiskey or who perhaps had one, maybe a Laphroaig or an Ardbeg or something, and didn't like it. And my reaction to the Bunahavn is that for somebody who is open to whiskey but may not be a fan of peat, this is the kind of thing, along with maybe a Jura or something, that I would have them taste. And I actually prefer the Boone Hobbin to the Jura, even though I get the similarities between the two. And then I'm just tickled to get to taste the Balcony single malt, which everything I taste from Balcony's, I can't get a consistent flavor profile. I mean, I'm not saying that in a negative way. I'm just saying that each one of their expressions is unique, and I like some of them better than others. But in my experience of Balcones, this is really different, and so it was a nice surprise to get to taste a little Red Hots in my glass.
Sean?
Yeah, I definitely agree with all the panelists on their final thoughts. The Boone Hobbin, for sure, to me, kind of stood out as the unique one of the three. I think originally when you sent me the samples and I kind of snuck a nose into all three samples, I initially told people I think that's definitely a Laphroaig, but it's a very young, you know, like I said, in the tasting, kind of a Cargis. To me, it was great because it definitely had more depth to it than some of the other peated whiskeys, kind of the young peated whiskeys that I've had before. And to me, the Boone Hobbin, I definitely agree with Scott. They're going to have a hit on their hands on that one. The Balcones, I agree with Shelley. I'm tickled I was able to actually get to taste that one. In fact, I think I'll pick up a bottle of it when I head on down to San Antonio next month. It was great, and to me, it kind of reassured me that, for the most part, we're experiencing some really interesting things with whiskey here in Texas, and with Chip down in Waco at Balcones, and then the guys at Ranger Creek, which I know you've reviewed their small caliber bourbon, right. Which I've probably gone through about two or three bottles of that here. I absolutely enjoy that bourbon. And I think the maturation that you get here in the humidity and the heat of Texas is doing something very unique to whiskey. And I think that Chip and some of the other guys at the other distilleries are latching onto that and have come up with some fantastic products.
Shelley?
I want to say something else about Texas. I really enjoy not only that there are great distilleries in Texas making great whiskeys, but that they seem to be becoming more accessible. Not only can I buy them in my liquor store, but Austin, which has a very definite sort of pro-Austin, pro-local, pro-Texas bias, there are a lot of places that make their business on saying, you know, how local can we possibly be? There are a lot of places in Austin that are not whiskey bars where you can get a dram of Ranger Creek or a dram of Balcones or maybe even a dram of Garrison Brothers or some of the others. And so I think not only are we seeing great products being made, but we're seeing more people becoming familiar with them and getting access to them, and that's all to the good.
Can I echo something that Shelley was saying? It's not just a hypothetical matter of introducing people who are relatively new to a peated whiskey. I'm that guy. I've been struggling with expressions of Laphroaig to really wrap my head around it and understand it and go from appreciation, which is, it's easy with good whiskey, to enjoyment. And the Boone Hobbin, for me, that should have been my gateway drug to peated whiskey. I enjoyed a lot about it. I enjoyed things about it straight. I enjoyed things about it with the water. It was interesting, and I liked it. And so I'm going to take that as a recommendation that I need to pursue that more, and maybe also think about Jura as a way into this world.
Scott,
any final thoughts?
It was a great selection of whiskey, Mark. You covered a broad range from Japan to Scotland to Texas, and they were all really, really good.
Yeah, they're terrific.
I think they really. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say they were all very terrific. I kind of have to apologize to my dad later because he gave me a bottle of the Yamazaki 18-year-old for my birthday a couple weeks ago, and I promised him I wouldn't open the bottle until he closed on his new house. So, you know, we kind of have to keep this on the down low, so hopefully he doesn't download the podcast anytime soon.
Well, I gave a wide range in scores. I think my top was a 4.5, which is, for me, that's a perfect A, and I think my lowest was a 3.0. Nonetheless, I would probably order a dram of a different one of these three nights running and not repeat two nights in a row over the course of 3 weeks. There were just such interesting different things going on. And even the one that I personally liked the least, the Balcones, had such interesting things going on. You know, it's So there was pleasure there beyond mere aesthetic enjoyment of just being intrigued and interested by the differences and the expressions there.
Yeah, well, I would agree, and you know, I mean, from an 18-year-old Yamazaki with a combination of woods, the Bunahabin, which is a combination of keated, unkeated. There's probably some 10 or 12-year-old in there, but there's some pretty young stuff too, all the way down to the Balcones, which is very, very young. I got to give props to what Chip and Balcones are doing with a single malt that actually stands on even footing with a 18-year-old Japanese and a legend of Islay with Bunahabin, that it can play on that same field coming out of Waco, Texas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually scored the Balcones and the Bunahabin equal. And I agree. I think the cinnamon blast that you get from the Balcones, that beautiful kind of rich flavor profile that Chip's been able to find and introduce with the wood and the maturation process here in Texas, I think is just fantastic. And it definitely can stand toe-to-toe with some of the best bourbons that are coming out of Kentucky, as well as some really fine single malts that are coming out of Scotland.
Shelley, we'll give you the last word.
Well, I think it'll be fascinating to see whether the success that Balcones has had with expressions like Rumble and Brimstone and Baby Blue, despite what some of us have said about Baby Blue, and I tend to agree it's not my favorite. But I'll be curious to see how Balcones can go and take something that's called a single malt and sort of get it out there to a wider world that might not be single malt drinkers, because I really think that this has a lot of appeal for bourbon drinkers and for people that even like other kinds of whiskey and who think, oh, single malt, that's scotch. I don't drink scotch. And I hope that they'll be able to bring that message to more people. And I think they really will get a lot of interest from people who have other whiskey tastes.
Well, I want to thank all of you for helping us wrap up the first year of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings. It's been a lot of fun for the last hour or so, and I hope you guys had fun too.
Definitely.
Very much. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark.
Our panelists this month, Shelley Brisbane, Tim Davis, Sean Fauché, and Scott Rogers. Now, if you'd like to be part of a tasting panel for upcoming episodes, just email me. The address is comments@whiskeycast.com. Put tasting panel in the subject line, please. I'll get back to you with more details. Of course, you can always catch up on the latest whiskey news and interviews each week on WhiskeyCast. And you can become part of our global community of whiskey lovers through the WhiskeyCast Facebook page and our website at WhiskeyCast.com. Support for WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings comes from Kilhoman, Islay's Farm Distillery, on the web at KilhomanDistillery.com. WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2012, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.